Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. For so many of us confined to our homes and with limited grocery shopping opportunities or means, we are cooking more and relying on what's at hand for better or worse. Making it better probably means we need some ideas for what to make with what we've got and how to do it. And more than a few of us are turning to my next guest, New York Times food columnist Alison Roman. New York Magazine's The Cut just dubbed her the domestic goddess of the apocalypse. If you're on Instagram, you've undoubtedly seen the many posts from folks who have made the stew, hashtag the stew. And if you haven't, we'll explain shortly. She's also the author of the cookbooks Dining In and Nothing Fancy. Thanks so much for coming on today, Alison. Welcome back to WNYC.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, you're invited to join in and bring your questions about cooking through the pandemic. What do you have on hand that maybe she can help you combine into something tasty? Or do you have skills and time but need ideas for a recipe that will keep you distracted all day? Maybe you need remedial help, like Moira and David, if you get that television reference, with what is meant by folding in. Did you buy a lot of dried beans and now you're at a loss for what to do with them? Are you missing one ingredient from a recipe you always make and you need a substitute? You can call 212-433-WNYC and talk to Alison Roman this morning, 212-433-9692. So, Alison, the piece on The Cut that called you the domestic goddess of the apocalypse was titled Just Give In to Alison Roman, because you have definite ideas about what's good, like full-fat coconut, and what's not, like low-fat coconut milk. I should say full-fat coconut milk and low-fat coconut milk. I left out the word milk. But flexibility has to be the name of the game when running out to the store for a missing ingredient, when that's not possible, right?
Yeah, I have a lot of opinions about pretty much everything, but I feel like right now, I, like the rest of the world, am softening on a lot of my conviction just because I realize, you know, it's better to have something than nothing. And I feel like, you know, there's a way to make it interesting and fulfilling without feeling like you're sacrificing something. So just allowing yourself to be more flexible, less rigid than you normally would, and being open to potential swaps and substitutions and things like that is going to help everybody get through this.
So the stew, hashtag the stew, also known as spiced chickpea stew with coconut and turmeric. That seems like a good place to start. It uses beans, albeit preferably canned ones, and that coconut milk. What else?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people ask me, can, you know, it starts with chickpeas and people say, can you use white beans? And for me, the white beans sort of behave differently in this recipe, and I would direct them to a different stew recipe, also affectionately known as the Stew 2 or the Stew 0.0, which is a white bean stew with broccoli rabe. And so I think that you sort of look at the ingredients that you have, and then you find a recipe for those ingredients. But, you know, the chickpea stew, it's like I call for kale, and if you don't have that, you can use spinach or mustard greens or any sort of wilted green roughage you might have lying around. It's an excellent place to use something that might be on its last leg, something that is a little past its prime in the crisper, something like that. And, you know, people have done it with shallots instead of onions, or no garlic and use the leek instead. It is a really adaptable and flexible formula. It's basically, you know, a canned chickpea, some sort of allium, garlic, you know, shallot, leek, and then spices as you wish. And in my version, there's turmeric and chili flake, but you could also add cumin or paprika or something else in your pantry.
But the coconut milk
I do find non-negotiable.
High fat, full fat coconut milk, not low fat coconut
right.
milk.
Yeah,
why?
Yeah,
what's the difference? Is it a difference in texture? What is it?
It's a complete different texture. Yeah. I mean, think about, you know, yogurt, your yogurt experience when you have a full fat Greek yogurt versus a 0% yogurt. You can tell. It just feels like you're depriving yourself a little bit. And I think if you're going to go for it, you should just go for it. And the light coconut milk tends to be a little bit grainy, and it's a little watery, and I would just rather not use it at all. So I'm full fat or nothing, honestly.
I like zero fat Greek yogurt, but we'll save the debates for other segments of the show. By the way, how did it become the stew as opposed to a stew?
It sort of happened, I don't want to say all of a sudden, but I will say I didn't name it that. That was the people's will. They sort of started calling it the stew, and I think it was in, you know, the length of the title can get a little wordy when people are posting images of it on social media or talking about it with their friends. You know, it can get a little long. So I think somebody just took it upon themselves to abbreviate it to the stew. And enough people were making it at the time where when people said the stew, they knew what they were talking about, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
The predecessor to that was the cookies, which, so I think that without the cookie, there would have been no the stew, and they kind of just go on from there.
And if it's got that kind of nickname, a lot of people must like it. Let's stick with beans for a bit. If we're on a budget waiting for unemployment to kick in, or we just stocked up on stuff that would keep, what are some ideas for dried beans that I've been reading everybody's buying up?
They are a super hot commodity now, which is very funny to a lot of people who have been on the bean train for a minute. But I kind of every day or every other day will find myself making a pot of beans because they're extremely versatile. And then people make them and they say, well, now what? But the basic principle for a pot of brothy beans is you take either a dried chickpea or a dried bean, and you cover it with about 3 to 4 inches of water. You can throw in some chopped onion or any sort of leek or shallot or garlic into the pot. You could cut up a half a lemon and then any herbs you might have lying around, parsley stems, thyme, rosemary, and season the water. Not quite as salty as you would for pasta, but you want it seasoned. Bring it to a simmer and then just let them cook on the stove. And depending on the size of the bean and how old they are, where they're coming from, that can take anywhere from 50 to 120 minutes to cook all the way through. And, you know, people, I feel like, feel intimidated because how am I going to take this dried bean and make it as delicious as something that when I just open a can, it's cooked for me. But, you know, it's kind of impossible to mess up. You won't overcook them. And in the event that you do, that happened to me the other day because the beans were so fresh, they just kind of burst into a little bit of a mushy texture. And so we turned them into refried beans. So you just kind of take the bean, you let it cook, and then what does it want to be? Those beans wanted to be refried and creamy. And I had a pot of chickpeas last night that we ate almost like soup in its broth with some sausage and some greens on top. But store them in the liquid in the fridge, and you'll find yourself wanting to put them on pretty much everything.
Do you find online, if you've looked, that there's a pecking order when it comes to beans? Like, I just actually ordered a couple of bags of lima beans, which I like. And they were a lot easier to find than garbanzo beans, which I also like.
Well, I feel like in the pecking order, garbanzo is queen. I think chickpeas are everybody's favorite. Cannellini beans are also really popular. Those are just kind of like your basic white bean. Navy beans are also kind of in that club. Surprisingly, I find myself not cooking black beans or pinto beans as often, and I don't know why. It's just not something that I gravitate towards, but those are also very popular. People say, oh, I have a ton of dried black beans. What do I do with them? And you cook them in the same way, in the same recipe that I just sort of explained. But, you know, I think when you get to be like a real bean nerd, you realize that they really all do have their own special textures and purposes. And that's why it's nice to have so many varieties. Like they aren't all equal, you know. But again, you have to spend some time with the beans to get to know them, their personalities, to be able to decide which ones are your favorite. But I think chickpeas and cannellini beans are excellent places to start.
Janine in Springfield, Virginia. You're on WNYC with Allison Roman. Hi, Janine.
Hi, Brian. How are you? It's good to hear your voice. Thanks for all you're doing.
Thank you so much.
I lived in New York for many years, and I just moved back to Virginia in December to help my parents who are in their 80s, and my mom has this lung disease. So I moved down here to cook. But since I've been here, I've been doing everything else, and my mom is feeling better, and we're sheltered in, and so she's been cooking up a storm. And she's a Southern cook, so she's been doing she did beans last night with a ham hock, which makes me want to smack people. It's so good, but I don't have nobody to smack. It's really good. So two questions. One is, I soak my beans, and we had this whole bean discussion because for my health coaching clients, I did this whole thing about you have to soak and clean beans, and my mom is like, you just only have to wash them and get the stones out. I think you have to soak them so that you don't get gas and poot. And then the other question was for a sourdough starter. My mom doesn't do, she does biscuits, but she doesn't do bread. So I figured now I can learn, I can practice more with sourdough bread. And I have a can of old pineapples that haven't quite gone bad yet, but I use sweetened pineapples with yeast and flour, or could I use actually old kombucha for a sourdough starter?
Allison.
Okay. So the bean soaking question, we'll start there. I don't soak my beans. That is a hill that I will die on. I don't think you need to do it. I think that each body is different, processes foods differently. They make us feel different ways. I don't think it's a universally accepted truth that if you soak them, you're not going to experience that part, that side effect, let's call it.
That's the first time I've ever heard that. Are you a contrarian on this point?
I mean, I think I might be, according to some. But, you know, I think of, you know, Rancho Gordo as the holy grail of bean culture. And you don't need to soak your beans either. I'm going to take that as a win for team no soak. But, yeah, personal preference. And then as for the sourdough starter, I don't have much experience making my own, especially from something like fruit. But I would imagine that it would impart too much of a...
Whoops. Did Allison's line drop out? Allison, you there? Allison. All right. Let's see. I guess we're going to have to switch lines on this. This is what happens when everybody's working remotely. It's been amazingly smooth so far since we started doing this, and this is just a little glitch. We'll get Allison Roman back in just a second. And if you're just joining us, our guest is Allison Roman, who many of you may know as New York Times food columnist extraordinaire. New York Magazine's The Cut just dubbed her the domestic goddess of the apocalypse, which is why we're having a food segment in the middle of the Brian Lehrer Show, in case you were wondering. That's to help those of you who are now housebound with less ability to shop than you used to have. She's got all kinds of ideas for getting through this. Is Allison back? You there?
I'm back, I think.
Oh, there
am
you
I
go.
Back?
Great.
Well,
sorry about that. Whatever happened.
Great. No problem.
So let's see. I think you had just moved past not soaking beans, and you were going to answer the rest of Janine and Virginia's question.
So the rest of the question, yeah. I'm not the foremost sourdough starter expert, but I would say that starting something with canned pineapple would maybe impart too much of a flavor into something, or the sugar content would somehow derail the process. I could be wrong. I've never heard of anyone doing that. And then kombucha mother is a totally different culture and starter than a sourdough starter. So I'm not sure that those are transferable as sort of a one-for-one swap. But I know that there are a lot of great recipes that you can make a sourdough starter just using flour and water. And I would start there.
And without turning this whole show into... you know, everything you ever wanted to know about beans. What was that about?
Listen, I love that show idea, to be honest.
good. Well, we're kind of stumbling our way into that show.
Great.
What you said about little stones in the beans, is that a danger?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it depends on where you're getting your beans, but I've been cooking beans for a very long time, and I get them from the bodega. I get them from high-end grocery stores. I get them from farms. And never have I ever found a stone in my bean. So, you know, some people swear that you have to sort them or pick through them, and maybe they've had a bad experience. I would hate to, you know, bite on a stone when I thought it was a bean. So I get that, but it's never happened to me, and I've never done that. So, you know, beans are, it's a very vast, mystical world of preparation, and people have a lot of thoughts and opinions, and I think whatever makes you feel comfortable. So if you want to sort, I say go for it.
Nick on the Upper West Side, you're on WNYC with Allison Roman. Hi, Nick.
Brian and Allison, it's great to talk with you. How are you today?
Hanging in there.
I work for an organization called New York City Relief, and we actually deliver a plant-based vegan soup to over 2,000 people every week here in New York City. And I'm so excited that you guys are doing this food segment, because it's really important for people to know that so much of our debate over the last couple of weeks has not centered enough around the homeless populations. And I just want to you know, Brian and Allison to maybe give some thought to that and how we can give more to the homeless. My organization, New York City Relief, is trying to serve as many people as we can, and we're just trying to get out there because we're just not doing enough to serve the homeless. And I fear that the stimulus bill that was passed and that's being discussed is not addressing the homeless of New York, New Jersey, or frankly, the whole country enough. And I was wondering if you would comment about that.
Allison?
Yeah, I feel like there is a lot of attention being paid to this right now, as it relates to people losing their jobs and figuring out, you know, how to help, especially restaurant closures and people that, you know, were essentially, I mean, I worked in restaurants. So I know it's like a very paycheck to paycheck situation for most people. And now that all these businesses are closed, they don't have jobs. So it's not just about saving the restaurant industry, but also about those people that are like wondering where they're going to get food. And then on top of that, there's the homeless population, which is a baseline issue. I think right now the best thing that we can do, especially now that we're not going out to eat to restaurants, is find organizations that are beneficial to food banks and food pantries and providing meals to people in a sort of the most local way possible. So whatever is happening in your community, there's also countrywide initiatives. Feeding America is a great one. I think that they're doing a great job of bulking up, you know, pantry staples, turning those pantry staples into meals and dispersing those meals. Because regardless of whether or not you have the money to buy groceries or you don't have the kitchen to even make a meal, I feel like there's ways you can contribute to make sure that those people are taken care of right now. But I think what you're doing also sounds amazing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much and keep it up. Joy in Bergen County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joy.
Hi, how are you? Thank
Hanging
you.
Mm-hmm. You have a kitchen staples, a pantry staples question, I see.
I do. I bought a lot of sardines because I couldn't get any more. I have tuna, sardines, and salmon. And I would love some ideas for the canned salmon, but particularly the canned sardines. I've been making too much pasta and would love to do something else.
Oh, this question is extremely up my alley. Thank you for asking it.
Thank you for being there, and I can't wait to make that stew.
Oh, great. Yeah, I made dinner with sardines the other night, and it was one of the better things that we had all week. Honestly, I think that canned fish in general is such a great item to explore right now. It's a really great source of protein. A lot of those fish are sustainably sourced, and I just think they're great. They're great for you as well. But what I did with them is I just opened up the can. You take them out. Oftentimes, sardines are packed, and they don't have tails or heads, but they have a spine that runs alongside. And it's simple, but I ended up taking it out because it can be a little unpleasant sometimes. So removing that spine and then taking those sardine fillets and eating them in a bowl, either with fresh greens and some aioli and maybe some toasted bread, or turning it into a sandwich, maybe with some shaved radishes, pickled onions, sliced shallot, something like that. They're also really amazing, sizzled in a skillet with some toasted garlic and olive oil, and then tossed around pasta with lots of parsley and finished with lemon. They don't quite dissolve in the way that an anchovy does. They more behave like a canned tuna. But they have just a really nice, mild, sort of meaty, vaguely seafood flavor that I really, really love, and I wish more people cooked with them all the time.
And she also asked about the canned salmon.
Canned salmon is not something that I have as much experience with, but I do think in the ones that I've had, I treat almost just like tuna, you know, kind of take it into a bowl with some celery, mayonnaise, maybe some capers, and eat that as a sandwich or as part of a salad or something like that. I have heard of people turning that into like almost like a crab cake where they combine it with egg and bread and almost sear it like a patty. But I think that also depends on the quality of salmon that you're going with.
How much do you focus on nutrition in putting together meals and recipes? I know we're focusing mostly in this segment on things that are going to be tasty with the limited resources that people might have compared to their usual, but that also has nutritional implications. If we're not eating our usual variety of foods, if there are certain things that are falling out of our diets that we may not be aware of even, might lead to some nutritional issues. Like I see people recommending that we take zinc and vitamin D and more vitamin C. There was a report on the site Consumer Lab about coronavirus patients being given potassium and that helping to some degree, maybe indicating that people aren't getting enough potassium in their diets. I don't know. But what about nutrition in general and what you're focused on as the cooking queen of the apocalypse?
Well, I've never been nutritionally focused. I sort of feel like people, you know, there are a lot of people that are experts on that subject and dietitians and nutritionists and things like that, which I am decidedly not. But I do think that right now the biggest challenge is having access to fresh things like produce, dark leafy greens, things that, you know, I encourage a lot of eating anyway. My books and my recipes tend to be very vegetable heavy, augmented with pantry staples. And right now we have one of those things covered. We have pantry staples, but finding those sort of fresh vegetables and fresh fish and fresh meat and protein is a bit more challenging. So I think it's just about getting creative, using things like tinned fish, tinned sardines, especially an egg on things for protein and other sources. Like that. I feel like, you know, kind of understanding our limitations right now. And if you're used to eating a lot of dark leafy greens, then maybe consider where else you can get things like iron and vitamin K. But, you know, in my, generally speaking, in the recipes that I develop, I'm more focused on, like, is this an accessible recipe that you're going to have success with and, you know, find really delicious rather than are you meeting your nutritional needs? But I do think that's something that is something people can kind of ask themselves, okay, what am I actually putting in my body? What am I not getting that I normally have? And how can I supplement?
By the way, since even every recipe can start a debate on this show, listener writes that sardine spine is packed with calcium, should be eaten.
Oh great. So, okay. I'm all about it. I've had them in restaurants where they're fried and they're amazing. They get really crispy and they're almost like a little sardine chip. They're fantastic, but you know, I'm not deep frying in my house.
One more. Evan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Evan.
Hi, Brian. I just want to start by saying thank you for your show every day. It's keeping us quite sane in our household.
Thank you so much.
My question has to do with expiration dates. And, you know, I'm trying really hard not to waste anything in this time of, like, hunkering down. I have, like, part of a container of buttermilk, which always smells sour. I'm doing a lot of baking. Your lemony turmeric tea cake is on my list.
Oh, great.
And there's some old flowers from previous projects. How do I judge those things? I've never been a go-by-the-date. I'm more by the smell type of cook, baker.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I am the same. And, I hope that after this is done, we consider the situation in this country, which focuses a lot on sell-by dates and expiration dates and contributing so much to food waste. And, you know, I feel, you know, strange going on the record to say that I've had buttermilk in my fridge that's been there for maybe 3 months. And guess what? It's still great. And I think that, you know, flour and things like that, the way that we store ingredients is so important. And the sell-by dates tend to be so wildly conservative that we end up tossing out things that are actually totally fine to use and cook with. So I agree. I think it's very much like a smell test, if you will. Things like flour, you want to check for if there's any sort of bugs that have maybe gotten in there, if it's very, very old or in the back of the pantry. But if you're storing your flour in an airtight container or in the refrigerator, then you should be good to go for a lot longer than those dates. But I think also just generally being more mindful of food waste when we open a container, figuring out how to use it. I'm a big fan of taking something and processing it and then freezing it, rather than letting the ingredient itself go bad. So if that's like a tub of ricotta, maybe make it into a cake and freeze it, or turn it into dumplings, freeze those, make a lasagna, freeze it, rather than figuring out, okay, am I going to waste this half a tub of ricotta? I think the freezer is a really great way to sort of stop time if you're feeling like, okay, I don't know if I can eat this all to this week. But processing it, you know, chopping it, storing it in a Ziploc bag, putting it in the freezer, you're more likely to use it then, I think, in a beneficial way than to just see it go to waste. But I think being mindful of those dates and kind of taking them with a grain of salt occasionally is not the worst idea. I hope I don't get in trouble for that.
By the way, that sardine listener writes again to say they meant the canned sardines who eat the spine, not the fresh. They were afraid they were confusing people. All right.
I'll eat all the spines.
There we will have to leave it with Allison Roman, the spine of this segment about using the things you have in the house or can get under these circumstances, the domestic goddess of the apocalypse, according to New York Magazine's The Cut, and better known as New York Times food columnist and author of the cookbooks Dining In and Nothing Fancy. We will link to the Times recipe for her famous ones, the stew and the cookie, on our show page. Thank you so much, Allison. This has been fun.
Thank you so much for having me.